It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to Let's Talk. I am your host, Brian Pettaway. Thank you so much for joining me this morning like you do every Sunday morning here on 1500radio.com. Today we've got a great show. You know, I've been talking about domestic violence for the first half of the month because October has been, by the powers that be, designated as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it is very important. I don't want to take anything away from that. But October also represents something else that's very important, and that is breast cancer awareness. October has also been designated by the powers that be Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so the second half of this month, I want to focus on that because it is killing a lot of women and black women disproportionately. So today I have two guests that I'm going to be speaking to. One is Dr. Yolanda Lawson. She is the president of the National Medical Association. Now, I've had her here before, and I'm bringing her back so that we can all gain some knowledge about breast cancer and perhaps learn how to detect it early, how to get screenings done, when and how often, just so that we can help curb these numbers and possibly start to eliminate it completely within our community. Also, I'm going to have today as my guest a soldier, and I call her a soldier because she has battled breast cancer. Her name is Evelyn Lovelace. She's going to give us some idea as to what that was like and drop some knowledge about what to do if you're going through it. Also, of course, I've got the Petty. He's with me today, as he is every Sunday too. And he's going to be talking about the MLB playoff situation and what that's looking like, how that's shaping up. Also, NFL news. He's going to be talking about the games today, Monday and Thursday, and giving us some picks. And boy, oh boy, am I going to give him the blues because he picked his team, the 49ers, to destroy the Browns. And they lost. So yes, I'm going to give him the blues on this show, and I can't wait to talk to him. But that's later on in the show. First, what I typically do in the show is I open with local news and current events, national news and current events, and I'm not going to stray too far from that, but I see some things being reported in the news on Israel and Palestine and Hamas. And you know, there's always different sides to a situation, and unfortunately, because of the atrocities that have been suffered by Israeli people, all of the focus has been on one side, and that is the victimization of Israel. Well, I want to let you know that there is another side to this, and I want to shed some light and information that's not being mentioned very much in the news. Now, first, let me start with the absolute condemnation of the atrocities that have been reported against women and children at the hands of Hamas. And quite frankly, there is no real excuse or justification for that kind of savagery and barbaric behavior. I mean, none. What I want to do, however, is tell you how Hamas got to be Hamas and the condition of the Palestinian people. Again, this is not to excuse the past week's behaviors of Hamas, but when things erupt as they have, when things become as violent and as barbaric as they have, we must be able to report on both sides to tell the whole story about how we got to this point. Rarely things just pop up for no reason. And trust me when I tell you, when you hear the condition of the Palestinian people and what led to their uprising and what led to the beginnings of Hamas, it'll shed some light as to why things have happened the way that they happened. Not to excuse them. Again, I'm not trying to excuse how Hamas went about their business, but I do want to let you know that things just don't happen because they happen. There's always a reason. There's always that straw that breaks the camel's back where a lot of people just throw up their hands and say, I'm mad as hell and I just can't take it anymore. So what I want to do is I want to give a brief history as to how things got this bad between Palestinian people and Israeli people. And I want to do it and keep it as simple as possible because it can sound complicated when it's really not. By now, most people are aware of what happened on October 7th of this month, when the Palestinian-based militant group Hamas launched an unprecedented assault on Israel, with hundreds of Hamas gunmen infiltrating communities near the Gaza Strip. As I speak to you today, at least 1,400 Israelis were killed, while the Israeli military says that 203 soldiers and civilians, including women and children, were taken to Gaza as hostages. In response to that, more than 3,700 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed in air and artillery strikes carried out by the Israeli military. Israeli troops are also massing along the Gaza boundary, and Palestinians are bracing themselves for a major ground operation, which is sure to cause many more deaths. Israel has at the same time imposed a total blockade on the territory, denying it food, fuel, and other essentials. Right now, Palestinians have zero water, they have zero fuel, they have zero food coming in, and no way to get out. So this is how this thing started. Palestine was part of the Ottoman Empire in the 1900s. And during that time, Muslims, Christians, and a relatively small population of Jews were living side by side in harmony in Palestine with no problems. But also during this time, not too far away, in Europe, many Jews were joining a movement called Zionism, a movement started by Theodor Herzl in 1896. A movement that didn't just recognize Jews as a religion, but also as a nationality and deserving of their own nation. And after decades, even centuries of persecution, these Zionist Jews decided that their only safe state of being would be their historical homeland in the Middle East. So these Jews set out to establish their own independent Jewish state in the Middle East on Palestinian land. And this movement starts to take place as the first wave of European Jews migrates to Palestine. At the end of World War I, the Ottoman Empire collapses, and Palestine finds itself under British rule. And in 1917, Britain announces its support for a Jewish state in Palestine, which is called the Balfour Declaration. Once that declaration is signed and announced, the Jewish settler population in Palestine starts to explode, and it starts to feel tension between the Arabs and the Jews in Palestine. And violence for the first time starts to break out between Jews and Arabs. And then in 1947, Britain decides, you know what, we don't want to have anything to do with this territory anymore, and they relinquish their rule. And Britain leaves the decision as to what's to happen to Palestine and that territory to the United Nations. So in November of the same year, 1947, the UN decides to split that territory almost in half. 56.3% of the territory will belong to Jewish Israel, and the other 43.5% will belong to Arab Palestine. The city of Jerusalem, which is sacred to Christians, Muslims, and Jews, now becomes a UN-controlled territory. Jews accept the UN plan wholeheartedly and declare independence as the State of Israel on May 15, 1948. And with a feeling of the UN behind them, Zionist gangs violently start to expel over 750,000 Palestinians from their homes. It was a day remembered by Palestinian Arabs as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe. Neighboring Arab countries object to the land takeover, and the first Arab-Israeli war breaks out. Israel wins this war and then takes the land intended for the Palestinian state under the UN's partition plan. The State of Israel takes 78% of historic Palestine, including West Jerusalem. Fast forward to 1967. Amid growing tensions between Arab nations and the State of Israel, the Six-Day War breaks out. And when it is done, the map changes. Now Palestine is occupied by 100% of the State of Israel. Palestinian Arabs have been forced into Gaza. And though there is no formal peace treaty, things have simmered down. But shortly after, seeing how easy it's been to remove Palestinians from their land, Israeli Jews start to settle into Gaza and the West Bank, resulting in Palestinian struggle. And from that comes the rise of the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And their sole purpose is to liberate Palestine from Israel by any means necessary. And the fighting between the PLO and Israel goes on for years. The PLO eventually accepts the division of the land between Palestine and Israel, but the conflict doesn't end because more settlers make their way to Israeli-occupied Palestinian territories, forcing more Palestinians out into refugee situations. And the international community considers this illegal, but no one makes a move to help Palestinians or go against the State of Israel. And out of that frustration and desperation, an enfadada starts, an uprising by the Palestinian people. And from that uprising, Hamas is born. It's a political movement determined to fight against Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Palestine's Gaza. Aiming to decrease tension, the PLO and Israel signed a peace agreement called the Oslo Accord in 1993, and they signed it right here in the United States at the White House. In 1995, another Oslo Accord or peace agreement is signed, and during the signing of this peace agreement, it is decided that the territory would be divided into three parts. The first part, Area A, would be run fully by Palestinian administration under Palestinian law. The second, Area B, would be joint Palestinian and Israeli administration rule. And the third, Area C, would be full Israeli territory and full Israeli administrative and law. But here's the problem. Area C, which is given to the state of Israel, contains most of the West Bank's agricultural land, mineral, and water. And Palestinians have limited to no access to these resources. So once again, Palestinians feel duped and given the short end of the stick. And further peace talks, when these concerns are brought up, are unsuccessful. Palestinians lose hope, and in their desperation and frustration, a second intifada, an uprising, occurs. Israel starts to construct walls and checkpoints to control Palestinian movement. And in 2005, Israel withdraws from Gaza, but continues to build illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Hamas gains power in Gaza and splits from the Palestinian Authority, saying that they are too secular and too soft. Now, the West Bank and Gaza are under separate leadership. And after violence erupts in Gaza, Israel imposes a blockade on the besieged territory in 2017, restricting any movement by land, air, or sea. Israel has carried out military assaults on Gaza in 2008, 2012, 2014, and 2021. 2022 became the deadliest year, where at least 220 Palestinians, including more than 48 children, were killed in a military strike against Gaza and the Palestinians by Israel. In 2023, Israel carried out several violent attacks on Gaza and deadly raids in Jenin. So listen, this is what I'm going to say to you. Do I agree with what Hamas has done? Do I agree that innocent men, women, and children should be killed? Do I agree that the barbaric manner in which they sought their revenge or justice should be condoned or celebrated? Absolutely not. However, Israel has been kicking Palestine around for 100 years. Literally, they have done everything but try to wipe Palestinians off the face of the earth. And at some point, people raise up their hands and they defend themselves, or they fight back to try to wipe out the people that are trying to wipe them out. I mean, it's human nature. Again, I don't condone what Hamas did and how they did it, but I do understand why Palestinian people feel the way that they feel about the state of Israel. I also have a problem with how much we support Israel in this country. We give them billions of dollars each year. We glorify them, and we never hold them accountable for the atrocities that they perpetrate. Never. So I have a problem with how the scales of justice are imbalanced in this situation. And so I thought I'd give a brief history, not excusing anything, but giving some information as to why Palestinians and Hamas are so angry. If you've been kicked and kicked and kicked, and have any life left, at some point you're going to kick back. And when you're kicking back and you're down and you're not getting help from anyone else, who's to say how hard back you should kick? Now, I've been following this coverage of Israel and Hamas and Palestine in the media for the last 2 weeks. I'm always amazed by white media in particular when they act as if they don't know the history of this land, the land of North America, and how it was inhabited by Europeans. You know, when Europeans came here, they claimed to discover this land. Well, you can't discover something that's already inhabited by people. And the natives were already here. And they taught Christopher Columbus and settlers that came later how to farm and cultivate the land, how to hunt, how to survive the winters, and how to survive the summers here. They even helped them build some settlements here, helped them learn how to use the natural resources for medicines here. They did all of that. And then when the settlers, these Europeans, decided, you know what? We want more of this land. This is our land. It is God-given, is the term they used. What they did was, is they savagely beat and pillaged and raped and tortured these natives using weapons that these natives had never seen, because the weapons that natives used were to hunt food. They weren't to kill people. But Europeans had weapons that were designed to kill people. So they used these weapons against these natives, and they moved them from their land. And each time they wanted more land, they would do the same thing and move natives from their land. And when the natives fought back, they called them savages. They called them barbaric, uncivilized. Does it sound familiar to you? And this went on not for 100 years, but for hundreds of years. And now what they've done, I guess we can say what we've done because it's America now, what America has done to the Native American is put them on these small reservations throughout the country, mostly out west and in the Midwest. They put them on these reservations on land deemed not to have much value. But when value has been found on these lands in the way of natural resources like oil, what do? We go in and we take that land. We kill, we move, we bomb. We've done these things. And I'm not talking about hundreds of years ago. I'm talking the 1940s and 1950s. We've done these things to the Native Americans. It continues to happen. So it doesn't surprise me. It disgusts me. But it doesn't surprise me that we continue to feed Israel millions and millions of dollars and back the bully. Because we have been the bully. We continue to be the bully whenever we have an opportunity to seize what we want. That is how this country was formed. It's how it was founded. But we have rewritten our history in history books and textbooks to make us have been the victim that turned into the victor. When in fact, America has rarely been the victim in a situation. We have typically been the bully, the greedy ones, the ones that kept wanting more. No matter what we had to do to get it, America has broken land treaties, peace treaties. America has stolen land. America has stolen people, has killed and tortured to get what it wants. That's how this country has been formed and founded. So for Americans to sit back and judge the savagery of another nation trying to survive, to me, is incredibly hypocritical. But we back the bully because that is the mentality that we understand. So my final word is that before we form an opinion and choose a side between Israel and Palestine or Hamas, let's read the history. Let's know the entire history. It may not excuse everything that went on 2 weeks ago and how Hamas went about his business, but it may give you a better understanding of why the hate runs so deep. All right, enough of that. It is time for our Sunday fun facts. Now listen, I've been hit up about these fun facts. I don't know how they became such a thing, but I'm going to keep reading these fun facts. I'm going to give you three today in the interest of time, and I think I may just keep it at three. But we've got three, and I think you're going to enjoy them, all right? So fun fact number one. We, as in humans, are only born with two natural fears. The fear of falling and the fear of loud sounds. All of our other fears are learned fears. So we are only born with two, and that is the fear of falling and the fear of loud sounds.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Fun fact number two. The brain is the fattest organ. The stomach may be our body's fattest part, but the fattest organ is our brain. The brain is composed of nearly 60% fat. So the next time somebody calls you a fat head, take it as a compliment. All right, now here's the craziest one, but apparently it's a fact. At any point in time, 0.7% of the world's population is drunk.
What you talking about, Willis?
I'm serious. Apparently, as I talk to you right now, 50 million people in the world right now are intoxicated. That's a lot of people. But I checked it, I fact-checked it, and it's true. We got a lot of drunks in this world. All right, so it's time to change gears, shift gears, and get on with my guest. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And for that reason, I've got two guests today. I've got Dr. Yolanda Lawson, who is the president of the National Medical Association. Thank you, Dr. Lawson, for being here and giving us some medical information about this horrible disease that is killing black women in particular at an incredibly disproportionate rate. Now, we did just lose Suzanne Summers to breast cancer, but among black women, black women are suffering horribly from this disease. And I have someone who has survived a double mastectomy due to breast cancer. Her name is Evelyn Lovelace, and she is going to take us on her journey in a different way, with a different spin. And it's about spirituality and faith and how God has helped her through this incredibly scary journey with bravery, determination, a positive attitude, but most importantly, a very strong sense of calm. But I'm going to start off with Dr. Lawson. Now, she's been here before, so 1500 family, please help me welcome back to Let's Talk, Dr. Yolanda Lawson. All right, good morning, Dr. Lawson. Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
I am well. Good morning.
Things going well for you down there in Dallas?
All is well. Sunny and beautiful day.
So, listen, I knew I said to you the last time you were here that I would be calling you again. I know you didn't expect it to be this soon, but I'm so happy that you were willing to come back onto the show. You know, the last time you were here, your knowledge and your candor and ability to relate to my audience was like, it was appreciated by me, of course, but it was really appreciated by them. So I thought I'd have you back here because breast cancer awareness is, well, listen, I don't know a whole lot about the disease. When I have a guest on like you, I don't want to sound like a complete idiot. So I do research on the topic, and I started reading some of the statistics, and I got to be honest, I was blown away. Like, I had no idea. I'm a guy, you know, and I'd never had anybody affected in my family or close to me affected by breast cancer. So I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But in reading the statistics, Listen, what's the best way to survive something like this? Because the numbers are horrible.
The numbers are horrible. And so, you know, I'm the president of the National Medical Association. I've started a cancer initiative, and that initiative really is based around screening so we can achieve early detection. And so one of the best ways, and I'll tell you, I'm a women's healthcare provider. I'm in the trenches. You know, I examine my patients. I encourage them to examine themselves. I know that that's controversial now, and it gets confusing for women, right?
Right.
Can I be self-examining myself or not? And so, but breast self-awareness is very important, because we know over 50% of the time, women 50 or older, they find it themselves, right? They find something suspicious on the breast themselves, and then they come in to the doctor. I've even had women come in, their partner may have found something suspicious on the breast, and they come in, and then we can proceed with the necessary testing. So I still advocate, and especially when I'm talking to Black women, right? Because if we do get breast cancer, ours tends to be more aggressive forms or types, and our mortality or our death rate is higher. So I think it's imperative for our communities to be aware, check themselves. And I start teaching women that in their 30s. So lifelong, they began to set up a good practice for their own breast self-awareness.
You know, whenever I read about diseases and how it affects the country, I always hear how the numbers are disproportionately not in our favor as Black people. Now, is this something that is genetic, or is it just something that has to do with not being able to get to medical help? Like, I really don't understand. Now, some of the stuff I do, but stuff like breast cancer, I don't understand why we die or Black women die at such a disproportionate rate than anyone else.
That is actually a great question. So there is extensive research being done on what is the difference, right? Are there underlying genetic differences in the types of cancers we acquire? It's multifactorial, though. There's not necessarily just one single reason why you get cancer, right? I tell my patients all the time, you can't help who your mom and your dad and your grandparents are, but you can change some of the things that you do that are within your control to modify your cancer risk, right?
Right.
So it's just such as managing your weight, alcohol consumption, even alcohol and how much you drink is a risk factor for breast cancer, smoking, risk factor for breast cancer and a multitude of other cancers. And so there's underlying genetic pieces that can occur in association when some people get cancer. And there are some lifestyle and social issues too. And so I think we have to mitigate all of those, again, as a people, just because of our risk.
How often should women be getting screened a year? Is it once a year? Is it twice a year?
I'm glad you asked that question too. So, Brian, there are differences in the organizations that provide the healthcare community, doctors and us, those who take care of our patients, guidelines, right?
Right.
They go through all the data and the studies and you look at what are the best guidelines. And so you may recall over the last year and a half ago, the United States Preventive Task Force Services came out. And so there are two things that they said. They did not find that breast self-exam cut down on the mortality, right? So it wasn't necessarily a standing recommendation. And then the other thing is that to start screening at age 50. Not everyone adopted that. The American Cancer Society states start at age 45. However, you can offer at age 40. I'm an OBGYN. My College of American College of OBGYN says starts at age 40. So that starting age, I like to make it so for Black women, right? I still recommend start at age 40 just because of, right, those disparities. And then 1 to 2 years, you should have a mammogram every 1 to 2 years. But those guidelines I'm talking about are for average risk people.
Okay.
And so some people have higher risk than others, as you can understand.
Right.
First degree relative, whether your mother, and that's another point here, men can also get breast cancer. Right.
Yes.
And so if your father had breast cancer, you are considered, you're not average risk, you're higher risk. And the other thing that that for me is day-to-day education, sometimes a person themselves may not understand what their risks are, right?
Right.
So many women may not understand because their father had prostate or pancreatic cancer, they are at higher risk. They're not average. And so these things are why it's so important to be in communication with your physician, asking questions and allowing them. When a patient walks in the room, I'm taking risk, right? I'm doing a risk assessment on appearance and talking to you in conversation. So many times people may not understand why we're asking the questions we ask. And so the contribution of your family history is also very important.
Yeah, you know, I'm a numbers guy when it comes to reporting about things in the news. Statistics are fascinating to me. And so I was reading, you know, some things from the American Cancer Society, and they estimate that in just this year alone, about 298,000 women, that's, I'm saying 298,000 women, that's about one in every eight, or about 13%, will be diagnosed with some type of invasive breast cancer. Like, that's one in every eight women. That's crazy to me. And if that's not scary enough, about 44,000 of those diagnosed will actually die from it. To me, those are, that's an epidemic. That's almost like pandemic numbers. You know what I mean? No, I'm, we don't,
yeah.
But we don't carry it like that. Like I, so here's the thing. I'm a football nut. All right. And I started seeing years ago how the NFL was, had partnered up with the American Cancer Society, and particularly American Breast Cancer Society. And I thought, you know, come on, let's keep stuff out of sports. But reading this, having not known this, now I feel like it should be everywhere. Like these kinds of numbers should be everywhere.
Yeah. And what's interesting, Brian, so I noticed this weekend, I'm in Dallas, so of course I watch the Cowboys game. You see the players with their pink sneakers on,
right?
Pink suit. All of this. So it's everywhere because those players have sisters and mothers and wives.
Exactly.
Right, that need to understand the importance of screening. So I'll tell you this. When I went to med school, right, the number was still one in eight. We learned that in medical school, right?
Right.
So that hasn't changed. That's just, that is what it is. The sky is blue. The risk for every woman is going to be about one in eight. But the good news is there has been, so we look at when a person gets cancer, right? We always look at that 5-year survival, right? If you can survive 5 years with a diagnosis of cancer, right? We consider that, and then your increases your lifelong risk and reduces your lifelong mortality if you could just make it that first 5 years. And so we know that now we've seen improvements in that survival, right? And so there are wins based on we have better screening types of mammograms and screening tests for women. Also the treatments. So there are improvements sometimes, you know, in the discoveries around treatments, which brings up another issue why it's so important for us to be participants in clinical trials, right?
Right.
To make things work in our bodies also, these treatments. So that's why it's important to step up to that plate for us as a people also.
So as a man, I do understand that about 530 men also die from breast cancer a year. I'm going to ask you two questions, a two-part question. One, what can I do for myself as far as the screening process? Because when I go get my physical, I don't get screened for breast cancer. I just don't. You know, but as a guy that's home, what can I do? And the other part to that question is what? How can I? This is going to sound kind of crazy, but I don't just want to feel up my girl, but I want to know what can I do with her to see if I can figure out if there's anything going on.
Absolutely. So as far as for a man, so the risk assessment is probably one of the most important things because we would only screen, of course, those men who had particular risk, right?
Right.
And so that would be in his parental history of cancer. So for us, we're going to look at what's most important, your parents, your siblings, and your grandparents, right?
Right.
Thinking about the first degree relatives and your aunts and uncles. So that cancer history in the family is going to be quite important because that may lead your physician to order genetic testing so many times with men, it may be a genetic associated mutation that increases their risk for cancer. Or a man should, he should touch himself too. A man should be, just like we are told to do our monthly breast self exam, men are told to check their testicles, they should check across their chest. If you see something strange on the skin or a lump, you should go get it checked also. It's just not common in men, but it can occur. But much of that, I guide men, is the family history is quite important to lead us into any type of screening modality. And as far as you for your partners, men, you know, I say, again, encouragement, right? Many times, men will bring up things to women, right? And so a lot of times women come in and say to me, he felt something or he noticed something. That's important to listen, advocate for your partner also. Encourage her. Sometimes women won't even go get the mammogram because they're afraid. They're fearful. And so that's when I tell him, stand beside her, go with her, whatever support and reassurance you can, because you can be reluctant. I can even tell you, Brian, I have patients, I may do their screening mammogram. We may not know, we may see something suspicious and they may need to come back. They could be hesitant to do that. And so those types of scenarios are important to be with the woman, because if you can understand having a test result out there that's not quite normal and you don't know yet, that anxiety, is scary. It's really scary for people.
Well, I want to say to the guys that are listening, when we are oftentimes afraid to mention what we consider to be imperfections to our women with their bodies, in a case like this, if you feel something, say something. Do not hesitate. Do not hesitate. Early detection is everything in this particular type of cancer, in most cancers, actually. Let me ask you this. When you have patients that come in, first of all, as in gynecological studies, does that include breast cancer? I mean, breast screening as well? I mean, do you do mammograms as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So your annual GYN, your annual preventive care visit, much of the annual preventive care visit is around screening for cancer. So, of course, it's going to be heart, Your blood pressure, your cholesterol gets checked. Skin, it could be that, depending on if you have, especially if you're fair or you're Caucasian, Skin cancer. And so, yes, your breast exam, your pap smear, The pap smear is for cervical cancer screening. That's all the pap smear is for. That's another educational thing. People think the pap smear is checking uterus and ovaries and everything else. No, it is for cervical cancer screening. So much of that exam, that we do, which includes a pelvic, but the breast exam is included also. Much of it is about prevention of cancer.
So when you have someone that comes in, you feel something yourself. What is the next step for that patient? Like, how do you break it down to them without blowing their minds or scaring them to death? What do you say?
So the first thing, if I felt something in the breast, I'm looking at what I think I'm feeling, A breast versus a breast mass. Even when you look at a lump, there are benign types of lumps, So, you know, I don't want to overexcite or make people anxious, but I'm giving them information, because some of those lumps, a good majority of them, are benign, They're benign forms. Sometimes we don't even remove them. We'll give people the option. If I feel something like that, you have something like that, of course we follow it serially, every 6 months to a year. But, the first thing is not to alarm people, because, again, the majority of the time we feel something, many times it could be something benign. You can get cysts and other things that are benign. So every lump is not malignant, but every lump we want you to analyze and get it checked.
I started, I was like Prince up in the mirror. I started touching myself and feeling myself, because it's scary.
It is scary.
The numbers are scary. And I could not believe I didn't know this kind of stuff. I was ashamed of myself. I didn't know. What I mean?
It can be scary. But it doesn't have to be. And so the things I want to make sure people walk away with today, I still think there's a role for awareness around your own body, checking yourself to make sure,
Right.
Because sometimes folks miss their appointments with the doctor. The second thing is knowing that there are screening options. Check your local community. Sometimes, you know, people feel caused. People are also, you know, sold all these other, like something that they come in the office, thermograms and all these other things. But we want you to have a mammogram. We want to make sure that you're, if you feel something, because a lot of times people may directly try to call and schedule their mammogram. I still think it's useful. Be in communication with your healthcare provider to tell them what your symptoms are so you can make sure you're also having the proper testing done. Right?
Right.
So while we screen with the mammogram, there are even different types of mammogram. There's a mammogram I do if you have nothing wrong with the breast. There's a different type of mammogram I order for you if you have felt a lot.
Okay.
And that's why it's so important. And then, like you heard me mention, breast cysts. Well, they show up better on the ultrasound, not a mammogram.
Okay.
So if I see, I'm examining you. So that's why, again, I know it sounds cliche, make sure you contact your doctor, but it's so true because there are so many nuances, right? If it was that easy to just call, we wouldn't have to go to medical school if it was that easy, but it's not. And so we want to make sure that people get the best care, the right care, and the most direct care for whatever their issue is.
Wow. So one last thing. You mentioned that diet could play a factor. Is there anything right off the top that you think women can do, in particular Black women can do, to lessen the chances with their diet?
Absolutely. So from a diet, I'm not going to say that there is one food. What we know is that excess weight. And so that's why excess weight is a risk factor. And that has to do with biology. So there are a couple cancers from a reproductive aspect that your weight can increase your risk for. It's uterine and it's breast. And so excess body mass index, because there are metabolic changes, and especially there's estrogen in the fat. Most of the time we store estrogen in our fat, extra estrogen, which can stimulate a breast cancer. So you heard me say smoking, alcohol, even how late you start menopause or how early you start your menstrual cycle, risk factor. Those girls who start very early. Never having a baby, never being pregnant is a risk factor. So when I'm saying to you, when the doctor is talking to you the entire time, I'm calculating risk. And so breastfeeding is protective. So while we talk about breastfeeding for our babies, it is superior for our babies. There's also a maternal health piece to breastfeed.
Okay. I had heard that before.
All of these things are important. Absolutely. Yes.
Wow. Well, listen, I'm glad that I had you on this morning. I'm going to have Evelyn on, Evelyn Lovelace. She is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. She's battled it twice. She's going to tell me her story, but Dr. Lawson, thank you so much. I mean, I was blown away, so I had to call you. I had to make sure these numbers were right and get some information to my listeners, so I appreciate you being here this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Whatever I can do to help educate your listeners, I'm here for you.
Well, we appreciate you. You know, you'll be hearing from me again.
Very good.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That was Dr. Yolanda Lawson. Great having her here. It's always great to have the president of the National Medical Association on speed dial. She is so full of knowledge and so upbeat and optimistic as to how things can go in a situation. And that's the kind of doctor you want to talk to. And that lends me to my next guest, who has shown us that, yes, you can battle this and you can win. It's a great segue into having this soldier on the show. Her name is Evelyn Lovelace. She's battled this disease, and she's here to talk about it. So please help me welcome to Let's Talk and the 1500 family, breast cancer survivor Evelyn Lovelace. All right, so thanks for coming, Evelyn. Good morning. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, and I feel great. Thank the Lord.
Absolutely, absolutely. So listen, like many of my listeners, I'm going to be hearing your story for the first time. I understand that you've battled breast cancer. Tell me what that journey was like. And where you are now with it. How did this start for you?
Okay. So I love telling the story about my breast cancer because part of it is really a spiritual part of it. And I'll get to that as I talk about it.
Okay.
But I want to tell you that I went in on December the 30th, 2010. I was 56 years old to get my mammogram, and I had a mammogram since the age of 35 because breast cancer runs in my family. And while I was there, they wanted me to come back on January the 2nd to do a sonogram and a biopsy.
Okay.
So I had invited my family members to come up for a New Year's Eve family event. And so when I was there, you know, when I went in for my mammogram, I'm normally taking somebody with me, but I was so excited about this party that I went alone.
Okay.
So anyway, I was home alone when my primary doctor called me on January the 5th to say, "Evelyn, I'm sorry to tell you, but the biopsy showed breast cancer." And I responded to her that, you know, I highly suspected it, because even during the time when we had the family event, and it was a wonderful event, and we went through, you know, the dinner, dessert, we played games. And at the end, I told them, I said, "Guess what? I had my mammogram on yesterday, and the guy with the blue folder came into the room." Now, if you know my family, they know what that blue folder means. So there was a lot of moans, a lot of groans. Some people started crying. There was a lot of sadness on their faces because they knew that that was an indication of breast cancer. And so years earlier, one of my cousins had us laughing because she said, "If a doctor ever walked in a room with a blue folder, you in trouble." So my grandmother, Kate Smith, was diagnosed at the age of 63 with breast cancer. And at that time, what they did is they remove your breast and sent you home. She died 3 years later. And I always say, why couldn't she leave us a legacy of money instead of breast cancer?
Right.
So through her legacy, she had three daughters. So my aunt died from breast cancer. Three of her grandchildren, who of course my first cousin, had died from breast cancer. And then I have first cousin, her grandchildren, who was still living, but they were survivors. And here I come now with breast cancer, her eighth grandchild with breast cancer, and her legacy, if you include her daughter, legacy number nine. So since that time, two more of my relatives have been diagnosed. So when I heard that I had breast cancer, you know, it wasn't like, you know, you hear people say, "Oh, breast cancer doesn't run in family," but it runs in my family. It's like a generational curse that we pray about, but we stay on top of it.
Okay.
So at the point when I was diagnosed, you know, I adjusted my mindset, because after my doctor called, I tell you, I got in the bed, I pulled the covers up over my head. And I tell you, I went into 4 minutes, this darkness just came in my spirit. And thank the Lord, I've never had it before, but it was just darkness.
Right.
And then I popped up and I said, oh no. I tell you, with nobody in the house with me, I said, "No, Satan, we're not going there, because the joy of the Lord will be my strength. And I'm going to walk through this battle with Jesus on one side and God on the other." And that was my testimony. And I see these signs all the time, like "fight like a girl" or "survival warrior." I'm telling you, that breast cancer journey will make you know what it means to fight like a journey and be on the battlefield. But anyway, when I shared the news with my son and my family members, I actually was lifting them up instead of them lifting me up, because again, with my mindset, I said, you know, this is a win-win situation. Either I'm be standing at the feet of Jesus, or I'm going to have more earthly time with you. And, you know, 12 years later, I've still had more earthly time with them.
That's awesome.
In my house and everywhere, I posted healing scriptures. I asked everybody, don't speak anything negative around me. I didn't want to hear it. But one thing that I will tell you, I read this article from this woman who made jewelry. And she was in the article, she said, "When I went into the doctor, they gave me 4 months to live." And so she said she rushed home. She said, "You know, people always ask me about my jewelry, so I'm going to make jewelry for people and give it to them within this 4 months." And so, this article was saying she was still living, and it was 35 years later.
Wow.
And when I shared this with my family, my sisters went out and brought me a cricket machine, because I love to crack. So I'm here to tell you, 20 those years later, I'm still crafting and I'm still gifting my crafts to people. I'm like, that might be something for somebody. Don't put your mindset so much on your cancer or your problems, but just keep it moving. Just keep it moving.
Well, I'm sure attitude has a lot to do, and positive outlook has a lot to do with the healing process. And your faith, obviously. But as far as the medical aspect of this, what kind of treatments did they have you going through? Like, what was that battle like?
Okay, so then I get to the next part, finding the right doctors. Because throughout the treatments, I really saw the hands of God everywhere. I researched breast cancer surgeon, plastic surgeon. And so I called to try to get into the head of Sibley Hospital, and she wasn't taking anybody at the time. And then I looked in the Washingtonian for the best plastic surgeon, and I called and they said, well, plus she won't see you until after your surgery. But I was very persistent. Okay. I mean, I call and I call and call. I guess they got so sick of me calling, and you got to be an advocate. So they said, well, she said, if you can come in at 4 p.m., this is the plastic surgeon, she'll see you. And while I was sitting there talking to her, she said, well, who's your breast surgeon? I said, well, I was trying to get into this lady who's the head of breast surgery at Sibley, but she's not taking anybody. She said, well, I'm having dinner with her Friday night.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something? The grace of God. She called me on Monday and she said, well, she says she'll take you. So that was really one. My oncologist who I met before, because I had gone with a friend, I used her as my oncologist, but I want to tell you, because part of my story is so spiritual. When I was, went in with family members, I met with her, and she had given me a protocol. But when I came back to the office, this is before the surgery, she said, I woke up one night, and I had you on my mind, and you stayed on my mind. She said, I pulled your charts, I reread your lab reports. And then I figure out why you were on my mind. She said, you had two small lumps on your breast. She said, but the biopsy, they only biopsy one. She said, had that small lump been benign and the other one had been cancerous, you would have been troubled. She said, don't worry about it. I've already called, because that's sloppy work. And so, you know, we just started praising in the office. And so I went through plenty. Plenty of chemo treatments.
What was that like for you?
Yeah, I opted to have a double mastectomy based on the history of my family. So I didn't go through radiation.
Okay.
And they kept asking me, Evelyn, are you fatigued? I was like, well, what does it mean to be fatigued? Because I wasn't fatigued. I would bounce in there like I was. Matter of fact, that song by James Brand. I said, hit me another time. Hit me. And I was so jovial and whatever. Sometimes I'll be lifting people up because they, you know, but whatever. But in my kind of, in my journey, I can think of, well, what do they mean? Are you fatigued? But let me tell you, by the end of that chemo, I had chairs, so many chairs lined up in my house to go to the bathroom. I would get to one chair, sit for 5 minutes, move to the next chair, and then I had to reverse it to get back in the bed. So, and I had never, it was like, in this experience, it was like ice in my veins. Ooh, I could not get warm.
Right.
Mother's Day weekend, which was May 2011, it was 96 degrees. And my family had wrapped me in quilts and blankets.
Wow.
They put a wool hat on my head. I could not get warm. I said, when I come through this, I don't care how much I have to pay Pepco. They can have my whole paycheck, but I'm never going to be cold in life. And that is true to this day. I am never going to be cold. So my next phase of my breast cancer journey, I title it, Don't Block the Prayers. Because I finished chemo in July. I started in February. And I finished in July. But once I finished in August, I had this infection. And so going through infections, doctors, and whatever, they had a home nursing service to come twice a day to my house. And I'm telling you, if you ever see the half of a Coke bottle, it was these little mini Coke bottles, that's what I can refer them to. And they would come twice a day and take all this blood. And it went on for 3 weeks, twice a day.
Right.
And the doctor I found out later on that the doctor, the oncologist, the breast surgeon, they were having calls. And they didn't tell me this, but they kept thinking that my cancer was hidden somewhere. But my son, who at the time was very supportive, I knew he was scared, but he was, you know, keeping a good game face.
Right.
So he said, Mom. And he was so excited. He said, look at all these people on Facebook who's going to pray for you. I told them that you had an infection. Now, this is why I say don't block your prayers, because these young people, they were like 20, 21 years old.
Okay.
The response was overwhelming that they would pray for your mother. I tell you, the next day when that home health nurse came to take that Coke bottle of blood from me, they called me back. They had found the source. And I think, imagine that. So I know a lot of people said, oh, I don't want this one and that one to pray for me. But don't sleep on that, younger generations. And I always say, don't sleep on the prayers of the unknown.
Right, right.
And my other part of my journeying experience, and this is my favorite part that I want to share. So I went after the infection cleared up and whatever, they scheduled the reconstruction surgery, which was in November. And when I had a great relationship with my plastic surgeon. She was like 6 years older than my son. I was like, I used to always tell her I could be your mother. But anyway, so I went in that morning and she said, well, Evelyn, I need you to sign this consent form for a blood transfusion. I said, I'll sign it, but I'm not going to need any blood. She said, I've been doing this for a long time. I have never seen anybody need blood. Now, we knew that the surgery was going to be a long one. I said, I'm telling you, I'm not going to need any blood. Okay. So that's what she said. Okay. Then she said, and when you come in recovery room, you can't hit the morphine pump until every 3 minutes. And so you're going to experience some pain throughout. You just got to hold on. I said, I'm not going to feel any pain. I know she thought I was delusional. I know but because she knew me, you know, she didn't say this woman is crazy. She was just looking at me. And anyway, but you know, before I had left home this morning, of course we had prayed or whatever. But when I was telling my family, and I was even talking about it in the car, when I woke up, I felt like I felt like a warm light running from the top of my head to the sole of my feet. I was warm, like in a snuggly blanket. I was so heated, but it wasn't like I was burning. It wasn't the heat you feel when you hot or you got hot flashes. It was a warmth. It was, I can't describe, it was an indescribable peace. That's all I can say.
Right.
It's like you're floating on gravity. You don't feel anything. I felt so good. Now, I had experienced that ice in my veins, but this was like a night and day experience. So I went through surgery, which was 16 hours. And
what was the surgery for? Did they remove your breast and then do reconstructive surgery? What did they do?
Oh, yeah. So because I had a double mastectomy, they had removed my breast. So I wanted to use the tissue from my abdomen.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they were going to reconstruct my breast. I can't remember what they call this surgery now, but anyway, they take all this fat, and thank God, from your abdomen, and they put it in your breast, and they got to reattach arteries, what they call capillaries. They had to reattach everything. That's why the surgery was so long, with all kind of tissues. But I'm telling you, I had no pain after that 16-hour surgery. I didn't have to have a blood transfusion. They gave me Tylenol. I'm here to tell you, the next day, doctors and nurses was coming in my office, and not in my office, in my room, because that morning I walked around that hospital.
Right, right.
Yeah, and they just could not believe it. You know, when I used to go back to plastic surgeon, she said, "I'm gonna always tell your story," but it was through the grace of God. It was, I'm telling, it was truly a miracle. It was through, you know, grace of God, that I had no pain. It's unbelievable, but I didn't. But my sisters would tell me, they said the doctor had told them every 2 hours we're going to watch the board. So we had to, I had to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning for 7 o'clock surgery. By the time they got to see me, it was 1 a.m. the next day. And they said, we all look like we had gone through a 16-hour surgery, and you were glowing. You were glowing. So that was a good story. And I would tell people who are new to the journey or who are a survivor, you know, I pray, you know, for me, I pray that I never have to go through that again. I never have breast cancer. I don't have a recurrence or any kind of, you know, heart challenge in my body. But I will tell you that I still never got back that indescribable peace, because as a human being with flesh, you take on life situation, you take on stress, you take on, of course, always Satan and his principalities and stuff going on. But I believe that when you are totally between a rock and a hard space, and that you just know that, you know, it is a win-win situation. And if you can just visualize God on one side and Jesus on the other and just let it go, I believe you will have an incredible, incredible peace. And so I wrote some notes that I really want to share with your audience from my experience. And they're just little tidbit notes. I said, call Satan a liar and speak God's word into the atmosphere. Because that's the first thing I did when I found out I had breast cancer and I went into that period of darkness. Uh-huh. You know, no. I'm going to, just like when Satan tempted Jesus, I said, I'm going to post these scriptures. I want a positive atmosphere around me, and I'm going to speak the word of the Lord in the atmosphere. And my favorite scripture became, the joy of the Lord is my strength. Another thing I want people to know is to be an advocate for your health. I couldn't get in with the breast surgeon. I was very persistent to get this plastic surgeon. And through my persistence and through the grace of God, she and the breast surgeon, I didn't know that at the time, we were good friends. Okay. But I called so much that they finally told her, I guess this woman keeps calling. Can you make it at 4 p.m.? And she was having dinner. So be an advocate for your care. I said, have a strong support system. Don't try to do it alone. Since my journey, there have been people who, you know, they have breast cancer, but they try to keep it hidden in the bush. You know they got it.
Right.
But they don't
right.
anybody. I believe that one of the things, I believe in prayer wars, and I said to accept prayers from any corner. Those 20-year-olds, sons of my friends on Facebook, I never met them in my life, but I believe that God heard their prayers, just like he heard the prayers for others. So I'm like, don't sleep on prayers. Don't say, oh, I don't want nobody to pray for me. My doctor, who was from India, didn't believe in Jesus. But she closed that door. She put her hand on my head and she prayed with me. You know what I mean? I had family members who called and prayed with me. And the only time you see them is at a church funeral. You didn't even know they knew how to pray. You know, I had coworkers of all religions who call and lifted prayers. I don't sleep on your prayers. And one of the final things I want to say is look for your angels, because they're everywhere. Just look for them. And if you can't see them, I want people to ask God to open your eyes and give you wisdom so you can see them. Because through my journey, I always would say, I'm looking for my angel. And something else I want to say to somebody who's not even going through breast cancer or gone through a health challenge. I walked in to get a prescription filled from chemo, and I was feeling so bad. I mean, you just fatigue, you feel bad, and you whatever. And when people start, and I got ready to get in line, didn't see the person, and this person just snapped my head off. And I turned around and says, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry. I said, I'm just so tired, I'm so fatigued, I'm going through breast cancer. I would like to tell people, you never know what somebody's going through.
Right.
You know, it's like all I wanted was somebody to have a good word, not to hear somebody snap at me. So be very cognizant of what you say when you see people. Don't just immediately, you know, snap off. But, you know, so that's my story. That's my breast cancer journey. 12 years later, I'm still here. I'm still crafting.
And so happy that you're still here. So, I really appreciate it. And it's been so uplifting. And I'm sure that you've given hope to a lot of people who have it. And yes. that you've given, you know, a cautionary tale to people who don't, you know, walk in your faith and be be an advocate for your health. Both of those pieces of advice are, you know, they're everything. So I appreciate you, Evelyn, and taking the time to come here and tell us your story and for your bravery and courage. I mean, it's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. You take care of yourself now. I'll be calling you again.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.
All right. I am so glad my guest came on the show today, but I know that you hear the music. And that can only mean one thing on this show. It is indeed time for the Petty. Let's give him a call and see what he's talking about today.
Good morning, Mr. Petaway, Brian Petaway. Brother B, how are you? Happy Sunday to you.
I was like, why are you so formal, boy? What's going on, Petty? How you doing, man?
So, I'm doing great. So, before we start, yes, I am humbled. And we're going to talk about the NFL and my being humbled in a few minutes.
Oh, as you can man. Tell,
my
okay,
tone
okay.
Is
I'm
going to
sit on it.
Is a little bit out of the realm.
I'm going to sit on it.
First,
I'm going to sit on it.
Let's talk about a little bit about the NBA, which will be starting this coming week. The NBA season will be starting this coming week. And a familiar face, a former NBA champion MVP, has decided to hang it up.
Who's that?
I'm talking about AI, the other AI, Andre Iguodala, has said, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished. After 19 seasons in the NBA, he's retiring.
Okay,
he's done.
Okay.
NHL,
was he in for 19 years? Didn't seem like it.
19 seasons, first with the 76ers, then he moved on and he got his ring when he played with Golden State. And as a matter of fact, when he was with Golden State, he was the MVP of that NBA
Finals. I remember
finals.
That. I remember that, you're right.
He's giving it up, he's done. So a little bit of NHL news, nothing really to report. The season just started this past week, and word has it that we may have a repeat champion because they are saying that those Golden Knights are looking pretty good already. Now, I'm telling you, Brother B, the season's still early. You know, how can you say the team looks this good this fast? They have a whole – listen, the NHL is not even over until sometime in April or May, but they're saying the Golden Knight looks good, so hey – who am I to say?
Right.
So you know what? I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right into it. First of all, yes, I am humbled by that 49er loss to those crusty Browns last week. And I said I would say, you know, look, you know what? Anytime a team has a mascot as Brownie the Elf in their middle of the field, I mean, how do you lose to that team? But you know what, Brother B? Let me tell you something. 49ers had their chance. But I'm a strong believer that you never leave the game to hinge on the foot of a kicker.
I was so happy. I couldn't wait to call you, boy.
Kicker.
Couldn't wait to call you.
I know. That's why I called you first. Let me tell you something, Brother B. There's only one kicker in the whole NFL that I trust. And that's your Baltimore Raven, Justin Tucker.
Justin Tucker.
If it had been him, I trust Justin Tucker. I think he is the best in the history of the NFL.
I told
kickers.
You, come on over to our side, boy. Come on over.
No. I'm talking about your kicker. I'm not talking about the team. We're talking about the team pretty soon. Anyway, my record, because Jacksonville won last night. Not last night. I'm sorry. Thursday night.
Right.
Jacksonville won on Thursday night. So that puts my Thursday night record to 5-2. Thank you, Jacksonville.
Okay.
Also, last week wasn't a bad week in spite of the two big losses. And I'm talking about the 49ers and the Eagles. My record is a 59 and 34. That's a plus 25. So if you put your money on those plus 25, you should have some money in your pockets.
I'm mad at you.
You know what? Let's move right on to these picks. As I mentioned, Jacksonville, thank you, Thursday night over the Saints, just as I said. 1 o'clock slate, we have the Vegas Raiders going to the Windy City to see the Chicago Bears, the Monsters of Midway. Now, guess what, Brother B? There will be no starting quarterbacks for either team.
Okay.
Justin Fields is
okay.
out. Porn star Jimmy G is out. So this should be something. This might be a game I might even watch.
Right?
I wasn't going to watch it. But I might watch this one to see what the backup quarterbacks do.
Okay.
So seeing that the Raiders, you know, travel to the Midwest, a little bit across the country, I like Chicago at home. I don't know why. It's just that maybe something's going on there in Chicago without Justin Fields. Maybe somebody's trying to win the position. So I'm going to take those Bears over the Raiders.
Okay.
Next up, Speaking of crusty Browns, I guess they're high on the horse, so they're feeling good about themselves. They will be traveling to see the Indianapolis Colts. Okay. I don't like neither one of these teams. You already know, Brother B, why I don't like the Colts.
I know.
You know, I've never liked the crusty Browns, but I got to pick a winner in this game. So I like the Colts at home against those crusty Browns. They are due for a loss. No Deshaun Watson. P.J. Walker probably played the best game of his career, even though it was a bad game. He engineered the win against the 49ers.
Right.
I don't think it's going to happen in Indy. I like Indy a little better than Cleveland. Give me the Colts over the Browns.
Okay.
Those Buffalo Wild Wing Bills, who just happened to pull out a game against the Giants last weekend, they traveled to see the New England Patriots. You know what? I hear Bill Belichick is on the hot seat. Well, that seat's going to get a little bit hotter because the Bills will go into New England and they will beat the Patriots.
Okay.
Now, this one should be a good one. It used to be a good one. I used to look forward to it every year. I'm talking about those Washington Commanders seeing the New York Giants. And I used to look forward to that. Used to be a big game. Back in the day, man, they used to battle. But I just like Washington a little better than the Giants. But you know what? Tyrod Taylor, who may have taken Danny Dimes' job, looked really good, right? For the Giants. He had them in that game. I think it was some coaching moves or some coaching play calls that cost them the game, but he really looked good for the Giants. I think he's a better quarterback at the Giants than Danny Dimes. You know what? As much as I think the Commanders are a better team, and speaking of the Commanders, there's rumors that Chase Young might be traded to your Ravens.
I heard.
But until that happens, he's still a Commander. I think he may want off that team because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. Anyway, I like the Giants over the Commanders.
Oh, no. Oh, hell no. No, that's not happening.
Well, we shall see.
Okay.
Here's another divisional game where the ATL Birds, those Falcons, they travel to Tampa to see the Pastry Chef.
Okay.
Now, you know, Baker Mayfield, not calling the Patriots up because he's always been serving up turnovers, but he's looked pretty good in Tampa. I think he's looked better in Tampa than he has in Cleveland.
Right.
And he didn't look too bad for the Rams last year when he briefly played. And, you know, I kind of like Tampa better than I like Atlanta. The Riddler, that's why I call him the Riddler, because
he's a question mark.
He's a big question mark.
Right.
I'm sorry. Give me the Bucks over the Falcons.
Okay.
And finally, and I should save this one for last, but because it's the last game on the 1 o'clock slate, I'm going to talk about it anyway. The team that I like, I almost like them more than my 49ers, but I don't. I just like them. I really like them. You know who I'm talking about, Brother B.
The pesky Lions.
And they are coming to Baltimore to see your Ravens.
Yeah, I
hear
you.
Look, I've looked at that game.
It makes me nervous. This game makes me nervous.
Everybody in Baltimore should be nervous. This is a big game for you guys. It's an NFC-AFC matchup, so it won't hurt you so much if the Ravens lose. But a loss is a loss.
Right.
And let me tell you something, Brother B. I like those pesky Lions. I like them anyway. They're coming for 5-1 record. They're the division leaders. They're trying to put a statement out there that they're the top, one of the top teams in the NFC. And I'm tell you something. Coming to Baltimore and doing something to your Ravens will put some, you know, put a nice feather in their cap. Let everybody know that, hey, we are a team to be reckoned with.
I don't know. Our receivers have a lot to prove. I think they feel that pressure. So I think they'll do a lot better this game than they have the last couple. So I expect the Ravens to win, but it does make me nervous.
Well, you know what? This pick doesn't make me nervous. Give me the pesky Lions over the
Whatever,
over
man.
The
okay, whatever. Next game.
4 o'clock. Then we're going on to the 4 o'clock, 4:25 slate. The guys from the Steel City will travel out to LA to see the Rams. You know what? I'm kind of surprised because the Steelers are finding ways to win. They've gotten themselves right in the AFC North race. They don't look too bad. It's like they're winning weird.
It's
ugly, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But they're winning. And I told you, because if you don't know, people should know, Cousin Mike has got that team doing what they do best. He has not had a losing season since he's become the coach of the Steelers.
No, he has not.
I think that Trent, that trend continues, but I don't think it'll be happening in L.A. Give me the Rams over the Steelers.
Ooh, okay, okay.
Man, we got a bunch of birds playing. We got some red birds and some sea chickens. So I'm talking about the Arizona Cardinals travel to Seattle to see the Seahawks.
Okay.
I'm not impressed with either one of these teams, but I like the Seahawks better than I like the Cardinals. Now, Geno Smith has probably resurrected his career because he looks pretty good out there in Seattle. I think he's a good fit in Seattle. Everybody thought that that Arizona would be tanking, but they've been playing some good ball.
Right.
They really have. And, you know, this is a big division rivalry also, but give me Seattle over Arizona.
Okay. All right.
This next game at 4:25, Green Bay Cheeseheads going to Denver to see Russell Wilson. And I'm telling you, Brother B, I don't know what to say. What should we say about Russell Wilson in Denver?
Nothing. There's nothing to talk about.
Exactly. But you know what? I like Denver a little bit better than I like Green Bay. My heart keeps saying, go with Green Bay, go with Green Bay. But I think Denver has a little bit of an edge being out there in the Mile High Stadium.
Okay.
So give me the Broncos over the Packers.
Okay.
And here's a good one. Here's the last one on the 4 o'clock slate, 4:25. Chargers, after that devastating loss against them boys, will go out to Kansas City. This is a big game for them. Hopefully a bounce back game for them because they need this game. They need this win against Kansas City.
Right.
But it ain't going to happen.
I agree.
Give me the Chiefs over the Chargers.
I agree.
And tonight, oh my goodness. Everybody should be watching this game. Two former teammates. I'm talking about Tua. I'm talking about Jalen. They both were playing in Alabama.
Right.
Tua took over for Jalen. So you know what? Jalen probably has a little chip on his shoulder. He showed that little chip on his shoulder because Brian Daboll used to be one of the coaches.
Right.
He showed that chip. And he shows it every time they play the Giants. Well, guess what? They go head-to-head. Man, oh, man. The big stage in Philadelphia. Those fish swim up the East Coast to see the pigeons. This is going to be a big one, man.
Yeah, I got the Dolphins, though.
And you know what, Brother B? Great minds think alike because I got the Dolphins, too.
Yeah.
Give me the Dolphins over those Philadelphia Eagles.
There you go.
And tomorrow night, the guys from the Golden Gate City, will travel to Minnesota. And this is going to be, you know what? I think they were humble. They learned something from that loss that you just can't show up and think that you're going to get the W.
Right.
So I think they're going to be playing really, really hard tomorrow night. Kirk Cousins is missing a key member of his offense.
Yes,
Justin
he is.
Jefferson is yes, not he is. Playing. Oh, my goodness. But you know what? There might not be no Christian McCaffrey. There might not be no Debo. So I think the playing feels a low level now. The stars will not be shining in Minnesota because they might be sitting out. But I kind of like the San Francisco 49ers a little better than I like the Vikings.
Okay.
And like I always say, I would be remiss in my duties if I don't talk about Thursday evening's game. And this is a big one. And, you know, I'm going to be looking at these two teams today because they play Thursday night. And, you know, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, what can you say? I think that's a good matchup. Two powerhouses in, you know, their respective conferences. Both teams I expect to be in the playoffs. Do I expect them to meet in the Super Bowl? Absolutely not. But I think we're going to have a good game on Thursday night.
Where do they play?
They're playing in Buffalo.
All right, then I got the Bills.
So we're talking about a cold weather team,
yeah,
a warm weather team traveling north.
Yeah.
I kind of like that north team a little better.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a tight game. But give me the Wild Wing Bills over the Buccaneers.
There you go, brother.
And that's all I really have, Brother B. I love the show, love what you're doing, and as a humble man, you got the last. You know, you have your laugh today, but you know what? I look down the schedule, and your bum birds have to go west to see the Golden Gate guys.
Okay. We're going to spank that ass, what? No problem.
You know what they say? Whoever laughs
best?
The loudest.
Yeah, whatever. Okay.
I'm out of here, Brother B. Peace.
All right, peace, man. Well, there goes the petty. Man, that was fun. I get so much joy out of giving my brother Guff about his San Francisco 49ers. So that was a lot of fun. But he did make some great picks this week. Make sure you take heed, maybe put some money down on it and earn some money. Also, thank you so much to my guest, Dr. Yolanda Lawson, and breast cancer survivor, Evelyn Lovelace. Thank you so much for your time and your testimony. Also, thank you for joining me this week. The time has gone by so fast, I don't have much more time with you. But I do want to say, please enjoy the day. Enjoy the day. Take a load off. Do nothing. Watch games if you want to, but do nothing. Because the best thing about doing, as I say every week, is that you can quit whenever you want. Wake up tomorrow morning invigorated, rejuvenated, energized, ready to conquer the world and be the best that you can be, not only tomorrow, but for the rest of the week. And I will see you here next Sunday, same time, same channel, right here on 1500radio.com, Baltimore's multimedia experience. Hey, have a great Sunday, people. Have a great week. See you next Sunday. Peace.